It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome aboard. Memorial Day weekend is less than a week away, and so is the traditional start of the summer camping and RVing season. Many folks are going to be heading to our national parks, which have seen booming numbers of visitors over the last decade. As a matter of fact, over 331 million people visited our national parks in 2017. In case you were wondering where the most popular parks are in the U.S., so you can either go to enjoy them or make plans to stay away from the crowds, here's the top 10, according to Federal News Radio. Number 10, Glacier National Park had 3.3 million visitors, a 12% increase over 2016. Number 9, Grand Teton National Park, one of my favorites in Wyoming. Number 8, Olympic National Park, known for its rainforests, mountains, and mountain goats. Number 7 was Acadia National Park, back in the Northeast, with 3.5 million visitors. Another one that got a big boost in visitors, nearly 6% increase. Yellowstone National Park came in at number 6, surprisingly, with a 3.8% decrease, and Yosemite National Park came in at number 5 with a 15% decrease in visitors, though I suspect this had to do with summer wildfires burning in that area last year. Number 4, Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, then Zion National Park in Utah, and number 2, Grand Canyon National Park with over 6 million visitors. What's the number 1 most popular national park? That would be the Great Smoky Mountains, bordering North Carolina and Tennessee. 11.3 million people visited there. And fishing, especially fly fishing, is one of the three most popular activities pursued here. Fishing is also what we'll be focusing on this week on America Outdoors Radio. And it's going to have not just a national flavor, but an international spice as well. We'll start off talking to outdoors writer George Crum. He's been with us several times on the air, and usually he's telling you about fishing in Alaska. But this time, he's going to tell you about an article about to be published in Salmon Trout Steelheader featuring his recent trip to the Jurassic Lake Lodge in Argentina, way down at the tip of South America, where George was casting from shore with a fly rod and reeling in rainbows of true Jurassic gargantuan proportions. Another big fish out there is called the king salmon, or in other places, the Chinook salmon. And that is the focus of a brand new book by Adam Weymouth called Kings of the Yukon. Adam is talking to us today from London in the UK, and he decided to paddle 2,000 miles down the Yukon River from its headwaters in Canada's Yukon Territory to the Bering Sea in Alaska. This promises to be a fascinating conversation with a man who, by his own admission, had paddled a canoe only about 4 times back home in Europe before embarking on this epic 4-month adventure in one of the most remote places found in North America. We'll take you back to the lower 48 states after that to give you the latest from the college and professional bass fishing tournament trail, as well as a West Coast fishing report stretching from Alaska all the way to sunny Southern California. On top of that, we'll talk to Tyler Ross from Fish Fighter Products. They've got a new accessory meant to make your time on the water more efficient. But before we go west, we're going to start east with our first fishing guest, who hails from the Granite State of New Hampshire. Next on America Outdoors Radio, we're going to talk to Clay Groves. He is the host of the long-running podcast, Fish Nerds, and he is also a guide in the state of New Hampshire who wants to take you fishing. Clay, great to have you on the show.
Hey, I'm excited to be here. It's really cool to be on the West Coast.
Clay, I'll be honest. I've been a fan of Fish Nerds for a long time. You know, I don't listen every week, but I love to drop in from time to time and hear what's going on. For our listeners who don't know about Fish Nerds, tell them a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, so we do a show that's all about fish, fishing, and eating fish. So all things fish are fair game. Everything from biology and science through eating the fish, cooking the fish, how to fish for them, all the things are all mixed up into one show.
And what I love about your podcast, you know, our radio show is a magazine-style format with several short interviews, but you really go in depth on your topics with your guests on each podcast.
Yeah, we like to dive in deep, but we also do a magazine because we have different segments, like cooking segments, but we get in deep. We actually cook the food on the show. We do a book club, Fish Nerds Book Club, FN Book Club, and in fact, this week we interviewed Greg Meyerson from the world's record striper company. He caught the biggest striper in the world. Now he's an environmentalist, so it's kind of interesting to see where people are going. So yeah, it's a ton of fun, and we try to focus on the unusual, the funny, and the mostly true.
That's true. When it comes to us anglers, it is true most of the time with just a few exaggerations here and there. Let's talk about your home state of New Hampshire. You know, it's not a top of mind awareness spot when it comes to fishing. What do you have available there?
Well, so here's the cool thing. New Hampshire has very few fish. There's 48 species of fish here. Most are not natives. I went on a quest a few years ago to catch and eat every single one of them. And we did that. That was where the fish nerds came from. But my focus, my energy has been ice fishing the last few years. I opened an ice fishing guide service. And so we love to get on the ice and fish from lake trout and bass all the way through like white perch and fall fish and some big minnows. And it's just a ton of fun. Of course, now, springtime, it's trout time. The trout are biting everywhere. Our native brook trouts are tons of fun to catch. It's great up here. It's beautiful. Now, we have mosquitoes, which you guys out in Washington don't have like we have, but we can tolerate them.
You know, we actually do have mosquitoes out here, and in some places they can be a little thick, but I suspect not nearly as thick as what you're putting up with out there.
I've lived out there. You guys pretend to have mosquitoes.
Oh, ow. All right, we'll let that go because I don't know any better, so I can't fight back. But
yeah.
You do have a small sliver of saltwater fishing in New Hampshire, too, don't you?
Yeah, we've got 18 miles of shoreline, and within that little short bit, we've got, like, world-class striper fishing. And right now, the shad, American shad, are running up our rivers, which are a great fishery. River herring are entering the rivers, the sea lampreys. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, you can fish in the rocks right now in the shoreline, and you can catch winter flounder biting. So it's a ton of fun. It's a great state.
Oh, it sounds like it. You're getting it on my bucket list in a hurry. And if I go there, I want to go fish with you. Tell our listeners a little bit about your guide service. I understand about the ice fishing. That's done now. What are you guiding for in the spring and summer months with your clients?
Well, so here's the cool thing. So there's a lot of hardcore guides, and I'm not a hardcore guide. So I bought a 24-foot fishing pontoon boat, and I am focusing on bringing kids and families fishing on some of our bigger lakes. And our target are whatever this biting, because kids don't care.
You're right.
They want to catch fish. So, like, this week, it's going to be lake trout, salmon, and bass. In a few weeks, it might be panfish, like yellow perch and pumpkin seeds. But the kids don't care. The kids want to catch fish. So, you know, we're going to target whatever is biting today and focus on kid-style fishing, because that's my audience. That's what I like.
To quote one of my favorite outdoors writers, Terry Sheely, I don't care how old you are. When that bobber goes down, you still get excited no matter what's on the end of the line.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's how I am with fish. And I don't love any one fish over the other. I love all the fish. So every fish is exciting. And I think fishing is an act of hope. You know, like it's a positive action. You put a bait on a hook and drop it in a giant lake, and you just hope something happens. And that's kind of like a really magical thing for me. That's why I love it.
I agree completely. Very well put. In terms of your podcast, how often is it coming out?
We go for once a week, and we are just cresting our 200th episode here coming up Memorial Day weekend. So really exciting. We've been at it a long time. I think we're the longest running fishing show right now.
I think you are with that track record of podcasts there. Let's send folks to your website so they can A, start listening to that podcast, and B, find out more about fishing with you.
Yeah, it's easy. Go to fishnerds.com. Everything is right there. And if you're not a podcast listener, we made it simple. Go to fishnerds.com, push the play button. You don't have to think about it. And, of course, there's links to all of our other stuff there, as well as the guide service. But we'd love more listeners. We love feedback, you know. We've got the Fish Nerds hotline. You can call into the show. So lots of fun.
Fishnerds.com. That's the website to go to, fishnerds.com, to listen to Fish Nerds as a podcast or to make plans to go fishing with Clay Groves in the great state of New Hampshire. Clay, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Happy to be here.
There's a place where the fishing is year-round, where the sun shines 300 days a year. The wineries and breweries are right downtown. The hiking and cycling offer spectacular views you just don't get in the big cities. Fortunately, the place is real and vibrant. It's the Dalles, Oregon, just 90 short minutes from Portland, along the gorgeous Columbia River, where the adventures are limited only by your imagination. Find out more at explorethedalles.com.
If you consider yourself a hardcore fisherman who takes pride in being the first person on the water and the last one off, Fish Fighter products were designed for you. We make products for the relentless fishermen who know that big fish are caught by those who put in the work. With our Relentless Series tackle trays, rocket launcher rod racks, and breakaway river anchors, you'll spend more time chasing the fish, not your gear. Designed and built right here in the USA, Fish Fighter products won't let you down. Gear up at fishfighterproducts.com.
Why book at Sportsman's Cove Lodge?
Why is Alaska like no other place on Earth? It hasn't changed in thousands of years.
From the way you get here on a float plane to the way you go out with the guides and the boats, it's just a professional experience.
And I said, this is as good as it gets. I said, if you can't catch fish here, you can't catch fish anywhere.
Your experience with us will leave you speechless.
Book now at alaskasbestlodge.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
You're back with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next guest is George Crum. He's an outdoors writer, and usually he's visiting with us about fishing in the state of Alaska. But this time around, he went to the other end of the world. That's right. He went as far south as a man can go trout fishing, Argentina. George, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me back.
Well, George, I'm excited to hear about this trip. Where were you fishing in Argentina, and when were you there?
I was in southern Argentina at a place called Lago Strobel, also known as Jurassic Lake, in October.
This isn't just an overnight flight. This is a real journey just getting there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really about 2 days worth of travel to get down there. But boy, once you're there, it sure is worth it.
And that's what I want to talk about, is the fishing. You sent me a picture of what looked to be a 10-pound rainbow trout, and I understand those are not uncommon there.
No, not uncommon at all. In fact, I think the average fish was probably in the range of 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 pounds, and we certainly caught some much larger than that.
This is interesting to me, because whenever I think of Argentina, I always think of big brown trout. So when I saw pictures of rainbow trout, I was a little surprised. I didn't know that this country produced massive trout with the rainbow species as well.
Well, it certainly does. And this lake originally didn't have any fish in it. And I've heard numerous stories about how the rainbow trout wound up in Lago Strobel and where they came from. I don't know which version of where they came from is true, but the fact remains that they were put in that lake. There's an awesome food base, supposedly primarily of scuds, which allows them to grow really fast. There's one major tributary to the lake, and apparently the fish started traveling up that river and became a naturally reproducing population.
So here's my next question. The tactics were you using? Were you fishing from shore? Were you fishing in a boat or a float tube? And were you fly fishing? I heard you say scuds there.
Yeah, it was all fly fishing for me anyway. And we fished both in Lago Strobel and in
the river, and it was all fishing from shore. It's all shore fishing, all fly fishing is what I did.
Oh, that sounds absolutely fabulous. How many of these fish would you hook on any given day? I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, you and I are both steelheaders, and if you get one fish of any size, you're happy, but I'm guessing you got a lot more than that.
Yeah, I would say on the average day, I fished it for 4.5 days. I think on the average day, I probably landed somewhere in the range of 25 to 40 fish.
25 to 40, 8 to 12 pound rainbow. Is that right?
That's right. And quite a few bigger than that, actually. And I mentioned that this is all fly fishing, and that is true. I caught rainbows over 10 pounds on dry flies in the river.
Oh, my gosh.
My biggest, I caught three fish that each weighed 19 pounds. So that kind of gets you an idea of what you can do here. You can catch probably the biggest rainbow of your entire life on a fly rod and probably the biggest rainbow of your entire life on a dry fly at this location.
This is absolutely incredible. So when it comes to the seasons, when is the best time to fish at Jurassic Lake in Argentina? Is it October?
Well, I don't know yet. I need to sample the fishing throughout the rest of the year. I know the season goes from around the middle of October until the very end of April. And remember, this is South America, so the seasons are reversed. October is really the end of winter down there, or the beginning of spring, and April is fall or early winter. I've only fished it in October right now, and I do know that there are large population of fish that are headed into the river to spawn at that time of the year. I think the fishing in April is going to be a little bit different. And in 2020, I'll be hosting a trip down to Lago Strobel the last week of April.
You're listening to America Outdoors Radio. We're talking outdoors writer George Crum. He usually is writing for Fish Alaska magazine, but this time around, he was in Argentina catching rainbow trout on the fly, averaging 8 to 12 pounds and getting all the way up to 19 pounds. In terms of the tactics, did you have to do anything different in Argentina than what you would normally do in Alaska or the continental U.S.?
Yeah, it's very windy down there, like it is in many of our premier trout fisheries. I preferred fishing the lake, even though that you have the opportunity for a 10-plus pound fish in the river on a dry fly. I preferred the lake. Battling the winds was a challenge for sure. My weapon of choice was an 11-foot switch rod, Deer Creek 11-foot 7-weight switch rod with a Rio Skagit switch line. I fished with an indicator most of the time, and I found the Skagit switch chucker line could power that indicator out into the wind along with a balanced leech fly, and I basically let the wind fish it for me. I found that if I took the indicator off and tried to strip flies, my retrieve was over shortly after it started. So the indicator allowed me to put the fly out where the fish were and then let it fish itself for an extended period of time. Now, in the river, it's a little bit different story. I didn't use a switch rod in the river. It's small. You can reach everything you need to with a 9-foot fly rod. I personally use a 9.5-foot 7-weight fly rod in the river, and I fished dry flies the entire time, mostly hopper patterns, but also some mouse patterns.
Tell me about the lodge you stayed at while you were there in Argentina.
I stayed at Jurassic Lake Lodge. It is not the only operation on Lago Strobel, but it is located right at the river mouth. It has access to what are arguably the very best places to fish on the entire lake and river. Really, really nice place to be.
So is this a situation where it's not public land, where each lodge has their own access, and so you have to be careful about which one you pick?
Yeah, you really should. And like I said, there are other operations on Lago Strobel, but they won't get to fish the places that Jurassic Lake Lodge has access to.
And how was the food? How was the accommodations? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
This place is a long ways from anywhere. In fact, the nearest airfield that I know of is in El Calafate, which is approximately a five-hour drive from Jurassic Lake Lodge. Despite its remote location, the food was excellent. I had eggs and bacon every morning with really nice dinner selections in the evening, including high-quality Argentine steaks, asado, barbecued lamb. Really, really nice food considering the location.
Sounds like a great place to visit to me. The last question I have for you is this. When it comes to this incredible experience that you had at Jurassic Lake Lodge, when and where can folks read about it?
I wrote an article about this trip, which will be in the June issue of Salmon, Trout, and Steelheader.
Salmon Trout Steelheader is the publication. Look for the June edition. Look for the article about fishing at the Jurassic Lake Lodge in Argentina by George Crum. As you just heard, it sounds like an incredible experience, and it might get you booking a trip to South America as well. George, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Anytime, John. Thanks a lot.
I'd like to welcome a new sponsor to our show. It's Sportsman's Cove Lodge, and many anglers who have been there will tell you it really is Alaska's best lodge. Sportsman's Cove Lodge sits on a salmon highway full of kings and silvers. There's halibut too, and there are some really big ones. Finally, with decades of experience taking care of customers, Sportsman's Cove Lodge knows how to treat you right from start to finish. Ready to book your trip of a lifetime? Then call Sportsman's Cove Lodge at 800-962-7889. That's 800-962-7889. 800-962-7889 for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might just get away. AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
If you consider yourself a hardcore fisherman who takes pride in being the first person on the water and the last one off, Fish Fighter products were designed for you. Fish Fighter products are used by the top fishing guides in the Northwest because they know having the right equipment is imperative to a successful fishing trip. With our Relentless Series tackle trays, rocket launcher rod racks, and breakaway river anchors, you'll spend more time chasing the fish, not your gear. Designed and built right here in the USA. Gear up at fishfighterproducts.com.
You're back with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got an incredible tale to tell you here. We are speaking with Adam Weymouth. You might say that London is calling. That is where Adam's coming at us today. He's the author of a brand new book called Kings of the Yukon. Adam spent a summer paddling the Yukon River through Canada, through Alaska to the Bering Sea, 2,000 miles, 4 months, paddling a raft, paddling a canoe. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Adam, this is an incredible story, and the first thing I got to ask you, is that a goose in the background I'm hearing?
It's actually coots, but yeah, pretty close. I think there might be a goose over there as well. I live on a boat on the river, so we do have some wildlife.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's the greatest background I've ever had for a radio interview. What possessed you to do this? I understand that you had only paddled just like 4 or 5 times in Europe prior to getting into a raft and then getting into a canoe and paddling 2,000 miles down one of the most remote rivers in North America.
Yeah, that's right. And like you say, there were rivers in Europe and rivers in England, which are streams in comparison to what the Yukon is, and really not the same level of remoteness at all. It came as a bit of a shock when I sold the idea for the book and then realized I was going to have to learn to canoe quite quickly. The idea grew. I traveled in Alaska in 2013, and I wrote an article then about 23 Yupik fishermen who were on trial for fishing king salmon out of season. And they were defending themselves, saying it was part of their cultural practice, their spiritual heritage, to be allowed to go out and fish, whilst the Alaska Department of Fish and Game was defending the need for the ban for preservation for the salmon. And so that was kind of the story in microcosm. And then when I returned to England, I followed the story and I saw that in 2014 and again in 2015, there were blanket bans on fishing king salmon along the entire Yukon River in Canada and Alaska. And I realized that there was a much bigger story to be told. So the idea for the book was to canoe the length of the Yukon and to speak to all the different sorts of people on the way that depend on the salmon and see how things were changing for them.
Well, it's an incredible journey, and you really capture it well in your book. I'm 50 pages into it. I'm absolutely entranced. Folks, it's part travelogue. It's part history lesson. You're going to see all the wildlife that Adam saw, and it's also a biology lesson, too, about salmon, and not just the king salmon either. Very well done, Adam.
Thank you. To me, it feels really clear, and it felt very clear during this journey that all these different pieces of the puzzle are all connected, and it didn't make sense to write about one in isolation. The history does impact on the biology, and the biology impacts on the cultural stories, and this, to me, felt like the most coherent way to write it.
Well, it is very coherent, and it's woven together very well, and it's really an enjoyable read. I've got to ask, though, you know, when you have a concept, when you pitch this book to a publisher, and you have this idea of paddling down a 2,000-mile river, it's one thing to plan for it, it's another thing to do it. Were there any schisms, so to speak, that were very different in terms of what you thought you were going to experience versus what you actually experienced during this journey?
I suppose the original draw to go to these places was reading Jack London and Farley Moat and stories of the Gold Rush and the huge wilderness, which sucks a lot of people in. I think that's why most people probably go to Alaska in the first place. And that's definitely all there. There were weeks at a time when we saw no one. But I was surprised, I guess, to find that so much of the story became about the people that we met rather than this vast wilderness. And it was the villages that we stayed in, such hospitable that welcomed us and let us stay with them and showed us how to fish and let us share their salmon. And that was really what the story became about. And that I found that talking to people about salmon opened up all these other questions that people wanted to speak about. Why they choose to live where they do and what they hope for their children and how they think about food and what it means to be indigenous in 21st century America.
You're listening to America Outdoors Radio. We're talking to author Adam Weymouth about his brand new book, Kings of the Yukon. Adam paddled 2,000 miles down the Yukon River from Canada to the mouth of the Bering Sea, spent 4 months in a canoe. Adam, I'm guessing you probably had some close calls along the way. Any of those stick out?
Yeah, we did have a couple of hairy moments. Going to Alaska, and obviously coming from England, where our biggest carnivore is the size of a badger, and going to somewhere that is very hard to not think about the grizzly bears all the time that you're out. And we did have a couple of close run-ins with bears. But in the end, what the most difficult part of the journey was the weather. You're on a river which is 2, sometimes 3 miles wide. When it reaches the Bering Sea, it's 7 miles from bank to bank. And rivers like that can get some really big waves, and canoes aren't really designed for waves. And so we had a lot of time either sitting out the bank on storms or getting caught in quite big, dangerous weather. And those were the bits that were difficult, not just for the canoeing, but keeping your spirits up as well. Having a week of rain or 2 weeks of rain and camping in that and putting on wet gear every morning, it does get a little bit hard to keep your motivation up after a while.
Oh, I imagine. Was there any point during this journey that you thought to yourself, that's it, I'm done, I'm giving up? Or did it just become more and more of an adventure as you carried on and got closer to the mouth of the river?
I don't think there was any point I thought giving up, no. And even logistically giving up would have been quite complicated.
I guess so.
But when you find yourselves 200 miles from the nearest roads, giving up isn't really an option. And the river really wants to take you the way that you're going. So paddling back up to the start would be harder than carrying on. But the story unfolded so much as you carry on down. You're going through different indigenous groups. You're going from very different attitudes towards the salmon in Canada and Alaska. And every turn of the river, every different village I came to seemed to unfold a new part of the story. So, and it was glorious for the most part. For a lot of the time, we had fantastic weather. It's almost 24 hours of sunlight. And it's such beautiful country that, it was definitely more a pleasure than a chore.
That sounds fantastic. The last question, maybe the most important one, the king salmon, the kings of the Yukon. Alaska Fish and Game has just canceled the sport fishing season on the Yukon for king salmon fishing. Like you said, not the first time they've done it. These salmon, they're in trouble. Why do you think this is? What's been going on? Is it over harvest or is it something else?
There's no particular smoking gun, but what seems to be certain is that over the course of the last 100 years or so, the king salmon have got an awful lot smaller. So I'd speak to people that remembered fishing, old people that remembered fishing when they were young, who would say that 70, 80 pound fish was a good sized fish. The biggest Chinook ever caught in, or king salmon, Chinook is the Canadian name, the biggest king salmon ever caught in Alaska was 126 pounds, whereas now a good-sized fish is about 20 pounds. And that's been selecting for the larger specimens over the course of the last century. Smaller fish lay a lot less eggs, and so we're starting to see a lot less salmon coming back. And then all the other problems which are now hitting the king salmon, like over-harvest and the ocean getting warmer and diseases spreading, are hitting them a lot harder than they would have done in the past because their numbers are so reduced. So it's a difficult problem to tackle, and what needs to be done is a conservative harvest to allow the size of the fish to get back up, really. It's not just about getting the numbers, but it's holding back on that fishing for long enough to allow the genetics to right itself and to start getting the bigger fish back. But then you have to balance that between these cultures, which are very reliant on the salmon, both for their food and for their culture, and how do you try and preserve those sorts of cultures whilst at the same time keeping those fishing bans in place?
Difficult questions, Adam, and difficult answers, though you certainly had a lot of time to think about them on your journey down the Yukon. Where can folks buy this brand new book, Kings of the Yukon?
Well, I always like to encourage people to support their local bookshops. Local bookshops do a lot for writers, and so it's nice for people to go in and if you've got somewhere local to buy it there. But it's also being stocked by all the big guys, so Barnes & Noble and Amazon and places like that are carrying it too.
It's Kings of the Yukon, folks. One summer paddling across the far north down the Yukon River from Canada through Alaska to the Bering Sea. The author that you just heard from, Adam Weymouth, he writes an incredible tale. I would highly recommend this book. Look for it at a bookstore near you or online at Amazon.com or the big box stores too. Adam, thanks for joining us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to welcome a new sponsor to our show. It's Sportsman's Cove Lodge, and many anglers who have been there will tell you it really is Alaska's best lodge. Sportsman's Cove Lodge sits on a salmon highway full of kings and silvers. There's halibut too, and there are some really big ones. Finally, with decades of experience taking care of customers, Sportsman's Cove Lodge knows how to treat you right from start to finish. Ready to book your trip of a lifetime? Then call Sportsman's Cove Lodge at 800-962-7889. That's 800-962-7889. 800-962-7889 for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
There's a place where the fishing is year-round, where the sun shines 300 days a year. The wineries and breweries are right downtown. The hiking and cycling offer spectacular views you just don't get in the big cities. Fortunately, the place is real and vibrant. It's the Dalles, Oregon, just 90 short minutes from Portland, along the gorgeous Columbia River, where the adventures are limited only by your imagination. Find out more at explorethedalles.com.
Looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer an affordable platform to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting host John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. But hurry, if you wait too long, this big opportunity might just get away. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
If you consider yourself a hardcore fisherman who takes pride in being the first person on the water and the last one off, Fish Fighter products were designed for you. We make products for the relentless fishermen who know that big fish are caught by those who put in the work. With our Relentless Series tackle trays, rocket launcher rod racks, and breakaway river anchors, you'll spend more time chasing the fish, not your gear. Designed and built right here in the USA, Fish Fighter products won't let you down. Gear up at fishfighterproducts.com.
This land, once wild and free, fades now from our memory. But I remember what it was like, what we were like, what we are capable of when we band together. Perhaps more than any other landscape, wetlands embody the life-giving abundance that nature has to offer. And perhaps more than any other organization, Ducks Unlimited is working to ensure that our continent's wetlands not only survive, but thrive for generations well beyond this one. These natural wonders are where waterfowl begin their cycle of life, where the deer and the antelope play, and where we, the people, gather together to see and share what makes the outdoors so great. The time is now to band together with organizations like Ducks Unlimited. The time is now to rescue our wetlands.
You're back with America Outdoors Radio, and this portion of the show is brought to you by Fish Fighter Products. They're based in Mountain Home, Idaho, and they sell accessories for your fishing boat direct to you at fishfighterproducts.com. We'll start off with a quick down and dirty roundup of some of the major bass tournaments that took place last weekend, to include the winners of the Bassmaster College Eastern Tour event on Cherokee Lake in northeastern Tennessee. Lucas Murphy and Nolan Hitt are the names of those winners. They compete for Grand Valley State University out of Michigan, and they came from behind to win with a three-day total of 42 pounds, 10 ounces of bass. That was enough to beat the University of Alabama team and to overtake perennial college bass fishing powerhouse Bethel University, which led the first 2 days but slipped to third place in the end. From Tennessee, we head west, where professional Wayne Brazil of Kelseyville, California, won the Costa FLW Series at Clear Lake, presented by Evinrude, with a three-day total of 15 bass weighing 60 pounds, 7 ounces. That earned him the top prize of over $82,000, including a brand-new Ranger boat and a 200-horse Evinrude or Mercury outboard. Clear Lake is Brazil's home lake, and it's his biggest win of his career. The biggest news, though, has to do with Bass Tournament pro Wesley Strader, who won back-to-back Bassmaster tournaments during the last 2 weeks. The first was the Bassmaster Elite Series tournament at Kentucky Lake in Tennessee. Strader won that, hit the road for North Carolina, missed the first day of practice, but still managed to win the Bassmaster Open at Lake Norman. All this from a man who wasn't sure he made the right move joining the pros in the Bassmaster fishing tournament circuit a few months ago. Way to go, Wesley. You are one of the very few pros who has ever managed back-to-back wins, the last one being that legend of a bass man, Kevin Van Dam. Continuing with fishing news, we've got a West Coast fishing report for you. We'll start off near Anchorage, Alaska on 20 Mile River, where the dip nets are in for hooligan, known as smelt in the lower 48. On May 5th, anglers were catching 100 to 200 fish each, dipping nets in the river for them. Smoked smelt aren't bad if you've never had them before, and they are great bait. If you live outside Alaska, though, don't think of packing a bag to head up there with your own dip net. This fishery, open until June 15th, is only open to Alaska residents with a valid fishing license. On the mighty Columbia River, bordering Oregon and Washington, guide Aaron Peterson, owner of Peterson's Northwest, has been doing the drill at Drano in the gorge looking for spring Chinook. Aaron says it's been inconsistent, but there have been some very good days. Generally speaking, when the flows are down, the fishing seems to be better. If you want to find out more about catching salmon with Aaron, go to his website at petersonsnorthwest.com. Further downstream towards the mouth of the Columbia, Bruce Warren, owner of Fishing for Fun Guide Service, took some time to talk with me while he was on the water with clients, enjoying one of the catch and keep sturgeon days available between now and June 4th. Bruce said they had reeled in three sturgeon when I called them, one of them a keeper between 44 and 50 inches nose to fork, but with heavy flows, stiff winds, and heavy debris in the water, you don't want to be out on this river in a small boat, and you will have to put in your work to get your keepers. That's the word from Bruce. His recommendation for bait, shrimp or anchovies, the fresher the better. If you want a lower Columbia sturgeon, Bruce has openings. Reach him through fishingforfunguideservice.com. Continuing into southern Oregon, the fishing at Diamond Lake, according to state officials, is, quoting here, off the charts, which is about as good as it gets. I got to fish Diamond Lake a couple of years ago, caught rainbow trout up to 20 inches long out of this pretty lake, not too far from Crater Lake National Park. Would highly recommend it. Heading into California, USA Fishing in the Hot Sheet reports a conversation with Dennis Fanner of Sacramento Pro Tackle last week, who says it's happening in the metropolitan area, with shad showing up from Freeport to the mouth of the Feather River at Verona. Shad fishermen are kegging up at the mouth at Discovery Park, and they are selling lots of shad grubs. Spring winds have been an issue for boats and anglers off the Southern California coast, but according to the latest report from BD Outdoors, the yellowtail bite has been good for 5 to 10 pound fish off the Coronado Islands and offshore for the San Diego fleet. Meanwhile, charter boats sneaking out to the Channel Islands out of Santa Barbara between wind events have been bringing in lots of red rockfish. And now you have it, your West Coast Fishing Report from Anchorage all the way south to San Diego in about 3 minutes. Next on America Outdoors Radio, we're checking in with Tyler Ross. He's with Fish Fighter Products. They're based out of Mountain Home, Idaho. And their shtick, so to speak, is to make accessories for your fishing boat that's going to make your time on the water easier and more efficient. Tyler, welcome to the show.
John, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Tyler, I wanted to discuss a couple of what I call under-the-radar accessories that are very useful, and one of them is the bait tray that you have there. How and why did Fish Fighter Products come up with the idea of a bait tray with a plug cutter to put in your boat?
Well, John, the first thing we came up with is we wanted to have something that was more beneficial for what an everyday fisherman goes through. And one thing that you encounter when on the water is there's a lot of processes, a lot of pieces, and a lot of things you need to get your herring prepared to go fishing. And with our board, we wanted to do a few things. We wanted to centralize the equipment you needed. We wanted to give you a consistent angle to prepare your herring and also allow you to, you know, kind of keep all that mess in one area. And we wanted to kind of make it to where it's a one-stop shop so you can get everything you need. You have your scents, your angle for cutting your herring, a good board, some places for tackle storage, and just kind of have a really good way to keep the boat organized. If you've fished much, you know, organization on the boat is paramount so you can maximize your time on the water and get more fish in the boat.
Oh, Tyler, you're absolutely right. And I have been on many a boat where either the guide or the person that owns the boat, you know, they take out their bait board, their cutting board, and then they're like, hey, you know, reach over there and hand me the herring. And then they're going somewhere else and they're getting out their fillet knife. And then they're going somewhere else and getting their scent. And you're right, it's not efficient. It's time consuming. Stuff can fall in the boat. I've seen stuff fall overboard off the boat before. So having something like the bait tray that you essentially just bolt into the boat, it's not going anywhere, is it?
No, it's not. And actually, we're really happy with the design. It has two handles, so it's easy to move around the boat if you have different areas where you want to use it. It has channels around the cutting board to kind of keep all the, you know, the juices and the scents from spilling out all over the rest of your boat, because you obviously you want that on your lures and on the water, but if you can keep it off yourself in the boat, it's always a good thing.
Let's talk about the plug cutter, because that solves a problem for many anglers too, doesn't it?
It does. What the plug cutter does for us is it allows you to have a compound angle that provides the optimum roll for your herring. And consistency is the big piece to that. And if you've ever fished with herring, you know that it's really paramount to get that perfect roll. In order to do that, you need to have a consistent angle every time. And then, you know, obviously tune that based on the hook placement on the herring. And, you know, we really feel that with our board, we've optimized that. We've made it to where it's extremely consistent, it's easy to use, and it's also safe. If you've ever tried to cut herring by yourself without the guide, you know, there's the fish are slick, it's the weather is cold, whatever, it kind of serves that purpose as well. You don't have to worry about, you know, slipping and getting a bad angle, a bad cut, or worse, you know, cutting yourself.
Well, I think it's a great idea. Again, folks, this is the bait tray with the plug cutter from Fish Fighter Products. Fishfighterproducts.com is the website to go to get the bait tray with the plug cutter. And I know that you sell primarily direct to consumer on fishfighterproducts.com, but you've got some dealers, including a big one in the Portland, Oregon area.
We do. Yeah, we have a partnership with Stevens Marine we're extremely excited about, which is allowing us to get our products in that market, which is a huge, huge fishing area in the Northwest, and we're very excited. So they do have a retail presence for us, and we're definitely looking forward to continuing to grow our dealer network, but at this time, they're one of our top dealers, so we're very excited about it.
So for all of our listeners today, tuning in on AM 1640, The Patriot out of Portland, Oregon, Stevens Marine is the place to go to get the bait tray and all sorts of other accessories from Fish Fighter Products. As for everyone else, just go to fishfighterproducts.com. That's fishfighterproducts.com, making your life on the water easier and more efficient so you can spend more time fishing. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you so much, John.
Before we go, we'd like to welcome some new listeners on board from Modoc County in Northern California, tuning into our show on KCFJ AM 570. If you're looking for other ways to listen to our show, we've got plenty of options for you. You can hear us online Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on TalkAmericaRadio.us. It's the new voice of conservative talk radio, and you can hear us on demand on three different platforms. Our newest one is Stitcher. We're also on Podbean. On either one of those platforms, just follow America Outdoors Radio. We're also on YouTube, our channel there, Northwestern Outdoors. That's one word. And don't forget to check our website and our Facebook page from time to time. That website, AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Facebook, America Outdoors Radio. With all this talk of fishing this week, I hope we've got you motivated to pick up a line and pole and get out there to do some yourself. I also hope you're blessed in the week ahead and that you do get out there to wet a line in a lake or river near you. Remember, it is your country and your outdoors.